'cause there's a reason to rejoice, you see.
Just listen to Power of Praise here on WEFT Champaign 9.1 FM on the dial for a brand new day.
Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave, that's all, folks. Dave on the board. Today is June the 4th, 2017.
Yes, we have our guest, Denise Curie, and she's...
A.K.A.
Alter Ego. She's on the air for a different period. So we thought it would be nice to have her to be here at a different time. First, I want to say something about some of the passings in the last little while. Mike Pollock passed, and Mike was an interesting fellow. He came here in 67 or something like that and did poli-sci and history and got involved with people who were involved with Vietnam at the time and the formation of different paradigms of legality or corps of different type. And he was on the Banner City Board for 6 years and on the Planning Commission as chair mostly for 12 years. And so many of us knew Mike well. He was an activist, family person. He ran a records swap for as a part owner for 27 years.
Oh, and wow.
Then gave it up as the internet came in and he felt like the vinyl and other things were losing out.
Ha ha.
He got a master's degree in history and then taught at the Banner High School. And he had a favorite course. He was head of department. And the course was the history of history by way of film and radio and things like that. And so his class was a rather interesting class at Banner High School. And his children have done well. He's a daughter and a son. His son is in Guam on a postdoc, and his daughter is a public defender. So we say goodbye to Mike, but he probably didn't go quickly. He was a very strong character. Another character for which there was a memorial yesterday was Ned Goldwater, who was a physicist of note, Fermi Lab and the like, an administrator of power, of vice chancellor for academic affairs and things like that. Well known amongst the academic community. He's kind of a character interested in everything and interested in family and friends, and over the years has closed out in a very nice way. The family sort of cut him off from driving cars anymore because he was driving at about 10 miles an hour. Then he got onto a bicycle and rode his bicycle for lots of times. But then the family got him off the bicycle.
Aww.
Because so they bought him a tricycle.
Mm.
And for years he drove his tricycle. But he would get lost between a Banner and home. And so there was this very nice note by a police sergeant who had to deal with Ned. And it was very complimentary about his willingness to survive and do things and keep going. As long as you were going, it was like a bicycle. If you stopped, you fell off it.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
wow,
so,
that is it. That's life.
And then I went south to Woodsy's memorial, and I was there too late. The two things were at the same time. So
we should note that Woodsy was a former Wefty named Dave Wood.
Yes, and he had a big red barn about 2 miles south of Philo, and the cars were all there, and I sort of took a record photograph or two. But then I went on to the area around with which I'm rather familiar. The Ombar goes through that area and leaves swampland. And there's little roads that cannot be rectilinear anymore. They have to be going around according to the streams. And then I went to a little cemetery called Jesse Cemetery, which was rather famous in its day because it had not been mown and it was absolutely loaded with prairie plants. And somehow we've gotten to the point where all these little cemeteries are cared for by the township supervisors, and they're mown, and each little grave is herbicided just in case the plants would invade. So I've been going there regularly, and last year there was still a prairie dock. Prairie docks have very deep roots, and so they can come back despite the mowing. But this year There's no prairie dog.
Oh, man.
And there's just this few tombstones and an area which is would seem to be have been a cemetery reserve, and that's now plowed out to crops.
Of course.
So I went across the road to someone who was planting and asked questions about it, because in that general area, part of the reason why the Yessi Cemetery was unknown was there was someone who also worked at the Nature Conservancy or Open Lands Project or something like that, and knew the value of the genetics in that plot. And that was very friendly. I talked to the farmer for a while. Can't talk too long because they're trying to plant then and planting late. And then I came back by Yankee Ridge and stopped off at the Barnhart Prairie. And I wanted to tell you to go visit the Barnhart Prairie. It's at the moment the penstemons are flowering. Penstemons have nice seeds and you can harvest them. So sometimes penstemons get to be more prominent than they might have been in reality. But they're there, and if you go south on Vine to Church Street, Savoy, and go a little to the west, you'll find a soil and water conservation easement sign, and a little parking lot, and there's a trail through the prairie, and it's growing. It's you see a prairie at this time of the year. The rosin weed is there. The compass plant and the dock are expressing themselves. The bush clover, the grasses are starting to grow. And you can get a feeling for a prairie at this time of the year. Notice that it's June now, and the prairie is not into action until June. And that's why we have so many cultivar plants here, because the farmers needed to have their cattle come into milking, for instance, with milk early in March, and they needed hay and plants that grew early in the spring. So the sweet clover is up, and for us it's a weed. For the pollinators it's a fantastic crop because it attracts bees, but it's a very, very invasive crop as far as prairie is concerned. But the plants are out, spiderwort is out there right now in the little prairie across the road, and Golden Alexander has reached its limits. In that area that was kind of swampland, I found some anemone, and I brought a few plants of anemone home to add character to the pocket prairie. So Lake Park is also doing well. If you want to go to Lake Park, that's a good one to see too. Well, let's introduce... We'll have Denise introduce herself in terms of telling us a little bit about where she grew up and what she aspires to do. She's on the radio. She's vice president of WEFT, and that's in difficult time.
Yes.
And so we appreciate her involvement, and she'll tell us something about LA. One of the things that she's told me at least is sixth lane. Highways, that's six lanes in one direction, right?
Yes. They don't call it a highway. Well, first of all, hi, good morning. My name is Denise, also known as the alter ego. And I take it you don't have to do the disclaimer on your show like I usually have to do on my show.
Oh, you
Dave?
Do it all the time.
No, I'm just kidding. I won't need it, so it's all good.
we have had people on WEFT, but disclaimers were important.
I was just kidding.
And really, we do actually already need to, because Dave already has told people they need to go out to the Barnhart Prairie. So we do need to tell people that the views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and no one else. So say anything that the FCC doesn't disapprove of.
That's right. Yes, I grew up in Southern California and a town called Lawndale, and 3 miles, about 2.5-3 miles from the beach, Manhattan Beach. It's about 20 miles southwest of, say, downtown.
So it's near
very, very
Orange
close.
County.
No, not necessarily.
A little south of it.
A little north. It's north of Orange County.
Okay.
Very close. I grew up very, very close to LA International Airport. In fact, there are times, you know, some mornings when you can, you know, when there isn't, when there isn't the 12 lanes in both directions of traffic, you can hear the planes off in the background, you know, taking off and landing
the
and all that stuff.
The planes land almost in the ocean.
They take off
island.
Over the ocean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's sort of an isthmus there where they come in.
Yeah. Well, I guess, obviously, I don't know. Maybe it depends on the wind and the weather and who knows.
Yes.
But oh, my gosh, LAX is a nightmare. I mean, it's just complete expansion. Well, first of all, I mean, I will tell you that, again, you know, I grew up there in the early 60s and 70s, so I'm kind of dating myself there. And I have seen quite a few changes just in my short lifetime. Again, I can remember, speaking of Orange County, I mean, it was called Orange County because there used to be orange groves and dairy farms out there. And I can remember as a wee girl, driving out to Disneyland, which is in Orange County. And I remember it used to be a two-lane, it was a highway at that time. And you would occasionally pass a dairy farm in an orange grove. Now, I don't think you could find one if your life depended on it, seriously.
Sometimes it's landscaping trees.
And again, no longer the two-lane highway. It's a six-lane, and I get this, it's a laugh, freeway. No, it's a parking lot. And that's literally six lanes in both directions with, well, one of those lanes is the carpool lane where you have to have, you know, like more than one person in the car, and that's still backed up, of course. And now the latest thing that I've seen, and we're talking here, you know, I checked a couple years ago. I'm like, just out of curiosity, I'm like, wow, how many people are there in the greater Los Angeles area now? And this was a few years ago, and 20 million. We're talking 20 million in the Los Angeles area alone. And now it's at the point where my mom is still out there, so I go out there, you know, several times a year, two, three times a year. I have to go check up on mom. And I'm not going to say the word hate because I really don't like the word hate. I dislike it very much going out there because it's getting to the point where I'm literally starting to feel claustrophobic. There are so many people out there. You literally have to plan, and I know I'm saying literally a lot. You have to plan everything around traffic. Everything. Like the last time I was out there, my mom had a doctor's appointment in just the next town over, and we had to leave 45 minutes in advance just to make sure that we got to the doctor's appointment on time. And
you can't ride a bicycle, I guess.
Oh, well, I mean, you could if you want to take your life into your hands. And also, so this is where I was going with that. And also, the last time I was out there, I've noticed that now many, many bicyclists are starting to wear like these little mini gas masks because of the traffic. Yes, because I mean, it's good.
Yes.
I mean, they should, but it's just like this is just getting to the point of ridiculousness, people. And again, I grew up very close to a beach community, Manhattan Beach. You know, I spent my summers at the beach, riding my bike to the beach and hanging out at the beach and all of that good stuff. And then there were little beach cottages along the boardwalk, you know, little beach cottages. Now they're, you know, multi-million-dollar homes that, yes,
and
it's just
in
high-rise apartments. Well, no, just luxury homes.
Yes.
Not many apartments. More condominium townhouses, and these just, of course, beautiful luxury homes right there.
The
so
Australians have been good at taking that area around the harbor, for instance, and controlling some of the high-rise sort of takeover.
Right, and I mean, needless to say, in the last 20 years or so, I mean, they are very serious about, well, they have been again for many years, cutting down on smog and all of that. They're very serious. You know, you have to take your cars in for smog checks. And again, I can remember back in the day, you couldn't see down. Like I had one of my best friends lived on a little hill, and from her backyard on a clear day, you could see the Hollywood sign, or you could see downtown LA. But that was on a very, very, very rare day. And I've noticed that you actually can see LA more clearly now. You know, when I go out there. So I mean, they really have done an amazing job on cutting down on the smog, I must say.
Well, your mother was going to get checkup, and some facilities that California provides are more liberal than we would have here.
It's a racket. If you know somebody, too, of course, you know. I'm sorry to say. It's not as easy as it used to be, but it's still a racket. You know, and needless to say, it's very, very rarely that you go in and your car is just going to pass right off, you know, right off the dot. No, we've got to do this or we've got to do that. And then, of course, if you have an older car, then it's even, you know, more detailed and, you know, more detailed inspection and all of that stuff. But it has changed quite a bit since my day, yes.
So how is the population, the ethnicity of L.A.? Is it largely Hispanic?
Hispanic. In fact, again, Lawndale, where I grew up, is mainly Hispanic. It's a rather mixed community. There are some Vietnamese, of course, African Americans, but the majority, well, I'm thinking like my mom's hood, so to speak. Mm. No, mainly Hispanic, African Americans, and Vietnamese. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And does that involve a population increase because they have very large families, or?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, they have the multi-generational families all living together and everything, and in fact, I'm kind of, you know, my mom is surrounded, and she has a very, I mean, wonderful neighbors because they keep an eye on her, but I'm kind of a bad daughter because they're, you know, Vietnamese and Hispanic, and they all have their families, you know, mothers and grandmothers, and everybody's living with them, and I'm out here, and she's out there, and they're like, I'm a bad daughter.
And you're an only child.
And I'm an only child. And the thing is, okay, of course, people, when I tell them that I grew up in California, Southern California, people here, of course, their first question is, why would you ever want to leave California? Like, if you've never been, you have no idea what you're talking about. And then I tell them about planning everything around traffic, spending, and I'm not exaggerating, $500,000 for a fixer-upper.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm serious. Wow. $500,000 to start for a fixer-upper. And that's not living. I'm sorry. They might be, I don't know what they're doing, but it's not living to me. And that's my personal opinion, of course.
So tell me about mass transit. I go to railroad seminars.
Yes.
And there's a move afoot to put a fast track in between L.A. and San Francisco.
That would be nice, but with our current Voldemort president, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. Hey, it's a good thing we did say the disclaimer.
Views and opinions.
You know who Voldemort is?
No, tell me more.
You know Dave,
yes.
The other Dave. Harry Potter and the Harry Potter series.
Oh, yes.
He's the evil guy. In fact, you don't even say he's the one, you don't even mention his name because then something more evil will happen, and that's who I equate.
Uh-huh.
What's his name, too?
Okay. Where does your water come from? Tell me a little bit more about your water. Are you taking water out of aquifers, or are you taking water from the Sierra Nevada?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think it used to come up in the San Bernardino Mountains up at Lake Arrowhead for a while. We used to get our water, and then maybe from the Colorado River. Again, honestly, I don't know, Dave. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's a big problem in California, especially if you have a drought.
And then, well, very quickly, then back to the mass transit. Yes, they are working on that. They are putting in several, like, short lines between cities, like L's kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. And they are eventually, I heard, again, back to LAX very quickly, that they are eventually planning to have where no traffic at all will be coming into LAX. You're going to have to park on the outside, on the outskirts, and then take a train or something into LAX, which they really need to do because, you know, I was just out there a month ago, and it's a nightmare. Ugh.
Yes. So you have some islands outside of LA that are preservation areas. Can you say anything about those? It seems like they have helped to survive some creatures that were out of balance and fished out.
Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know a lot about them either because, I mean, I haven't lived in California. And again, I still go back, you know, yearly. But I haven't lived in California since, well, 12 years.
Uh-huh.
And then even that,
well,
I was kind of, it didn't change as a lot. And I mean, at that time, I was actually living in Northern California. I've kind of lived, I lived in the LA, like I said, I grew up in Lawndale, which is LA County. And then my late husband was in the military, and we lived down in San Diego County
right
for a while because he was in the Navy. So, and well, he, yeah, near the border. We used to go over the border all the time into Tijuana and Ensenada and Escondido and well, no, Ensenada and someplace else. But nowadays, that's even very, very dangerous to cross the borders because of all of the drug things going on. And and then, I'm sorry, Jave, and then very quickly, and then after my husband retired from the military, then we actually moved to Northern California in Humboldt County. So I've kind of been in the middle, down south, and up north.
Well, you also, since your husband was in the Navy, you moved around the world. And so I think you've had some experience with Italy or Europe or other places.
Lived in Hawaii. Our very first assignment as a married couple was he was stationed at Pearl Harbor. So we lived in Pearl Harbor for 2 years. And in fact, one of the jobs he was an engineer. He was in the Civil Engineer Corps. Yeah. He was a CB, which is the Construction Battalion.
Yes.
Badass. And go CBs. And one of his jobs while he was in Pearl Harbor was actually they were redoing the Arizona Memorial. And so he had a hand in the refurbation of the Arizona Memorial. So that was very interesting while we were there.
So you have some geological interests in Hawaii. There's volcanic material. There's even a Diamond Head that is an old volcano.
Hiked it.
Uh-huh.
Hiked Vesuvius.
Have you been to look down and see the cauldron of
Vesuvius? Yes, but not Diamond Head.
Okay, no, Diamond Head is not an active.
Oh, correct, city. Correct. Yes,
there are islands in that Hawaiian chain
still coming up.
They're still active.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been there, looked down on all this molten material, and you can stand on rock, but it's only just cooling, and you can't be too close to that. But it's part of the world moving its plates around. And
So that was very interesting. But I must say, and yes, it was beautiful and lovely, but at the end of 2 years, I was ready to get off that island. Thank you very much.
It's fairly isolated. If you want to if you want to go to meetings, you have to get a plane, and it's rather costly.
Yeah.
So
I've
had academic friends that they're have pulled out of there for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
They were oceanic researchers, but it was very far from everyone. It's also a very cosmopolitan site because it's in the middle of this Pacific, and you have people from Asia, people from the continent. There's just
a range
of people. So it's ethnically
very
positive.
Yes.
And some of that politics falls over into the federal government because some of the people who are elected are usually fairly ethnically viable. They can handle ethnic differences. And that's a difference that we have to face today. Even I just had a call from Australia, and we were discussing that London had, in this, within a few hours of now, some group drove a truck in and killed 8 people or something like
on
that.
On the bridge? Well, is that when they went? They drove it on the bridge, or?
So we do have ethnic difficulties.
Yes. Yeah.
We've been to other places too.
Yep. And then of course Hawaii. Then went back to California. California was always kind of our quote-unquote home base, so to speak, because we both grew up there, my husband and I. Then went back to California for a while, and I mean, and of course he traveled much more than I did. I mean, there were assignments. Obviously, he would go to. You know, 6 months assignments where obviously the family is not, you know, doesn't go to, and so he traveled. I mean, he's literally been on every continent, including Antarctica.
Wow.
He was the officer in charge for a year of McMurdo Station down in Antarctica, and he loved it down there.
So he probably left from New Zealand.
Yes, in fact, the girls and I went down. They did. They took the guys, or the, not just guys. There was, you know, ladies down on. Antarctica, as well. They would take their R&R, their rest and relaxation, in Christchurch.
Oh, and that's been the subject of
Christchurch. And so the girls and I went to Christchurch, and we spent almost a month there and loved it. And it right after we left, and of course this was, again, dating myself, but this was 94-ish. And right after we came back from New Zealand... is when they had a big earthquake there.
Yes. And
used to that, California.
You have earthquakes too?
Oh, yes. I was in one of the big ones in 70-something. I mean, I was still in, oh, gosh, no, I'm going to say it, still in high school. And I was laying in bed one morning, and all of a sudden the bed still just started rocking and rolling, and I got up, and what the heck? And that was the big one where, like, some of the freeways in not Orange County, but in the San Fernando Valley collapsed in that. Yeah, so that was a biggie, and then some other not quite so biggies, but mm-hmm. Huh. And so then back to California, and then from there, Italy for 2 years, Sicily,
oh.
Italy. So some Italians don't consider Sicily Italy, but
no,
it is.
It's a different
it is.
Country.
So lived. Oh, so this is this is very interesting as well. So lived on the island of Sicily for 2 years, and again loved it, beautiful. But after 2 years, I was ready to get off that island, even though you're very close to the mainland. It was still a jaunt to get to the mainland. You know, train. Or then you have to go to Messina. You have to take a ferry across the Straits of Messina, over to the mainland, and blah blah blah. But anyway, while we were living in Sicily, Mount Etna is one of the most active volcanoes in the world. It's constantly erupting, and I have skied Mount Etna, and
Now, how did you ski? You skied on snow?
Yeah, snow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
We used to ski on dried plants. If you have a drought, or you can, and you had a hill, you had dried plants, and you could
of course
ski
just
down the slope.
Slide. So while we were there, again, so we are talking early 90s sometime, before he went to Antarctica. There was a major eruption of Etna, and the flow was on its way to endanger a little village, Zafarana. I remember the name of the village, Zafarana. And so they call in the sea bees to divert the lava flow, and they did it. I mean, there's footage on CNN, and all of this stuff that, it was really, really, it was a combined effort, of course, between the Seabees and the Italian military. But again, my husband told me, he'd be flying in a helicopter literally over, the volcano spewing stuff.
This is very, very
and
liquid, it moves like a river, and you can divert a river.
Well, and I guess what they actually, they tried, many, many, many different, ways to divert it. And then they actually ended up, dropping some of those heavy barriers that they used, those heavy concrete barrier type things. I think they actually ended up dropping some of those barriers inside the volcano thing. And then somehow diverted the lava flow and saved the town of Zafirana. So go Seabees once again. And
Sicily impresses me because the Australians at one stage into the 60s had a White Australia policy. The line went down through the Bosphorus, so Turkey even if you were a white Persian, you were not in the White Australia policy. And you went through Sicily, and Sicilians could come to Australia, and they were sometimes as black as black.
Oh, yes.
I had a Turkish friend who was not very impressed by the fact he got a postdoc in New Zealand, and it disappeared. And 3 years later, he found out why. He was born on the wrong side of the Bosphorus.
Interesting.
So there's Queen speaking Englishman. and some of our mafioso comes from Sicily.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's slightly a different place.
It's a beautiful place. In fact, I haven't been there for many years, but I dream, and I'm you know, never say never, that I would like to go back there and spend some more time there. Sicily, back to California.
Yes.
And then off to Brussels, Belgium for 3 years, and loved it there because it's just so nicely situated. You could hop on a train and in a couple of hours you could be in Paris, in a couple of hours you could be in London, in a couple of hours you could be in Amsterdam. And
and it's loaded with World War One history.
Mm-hmm.
World War One was right there in Belgium.
Flanders, and then of course the Battle of the Bulge was the major turning point in World War II, and that was in the Ardennes in Bastogne in Belgium. And little old Belgium is a beautiful country, and it's kind of like one of the little secrets of Europe, and they like it like that because, you know, when you hear, you know, the majority of people when they say, "Oh, I'm going to Europe," of course it's, you know, London, Paris, Rome, some places like that. But you rarely hear people say, "I'm going to Belgium."
Part of it is French and part of it is, I think, Dutch Reform.
Flemish. It's French, Flemish, and then there's a very small German community.
Uh-huh. So Flemish is sort of Normandy. Is it Celtic? Is Flemish part
German? I think it's very. I think it's German. Kind of German. Yeah. It sounds a lot like German.
In Germany, you have very great differences between them.
Oh, dialects. Oh, yeah.
People in the Alsace-Lorraine are very rather different from people to the north on the Baltic Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you had some background.
I've had a little adventure, yes. And then after Belgium, went back to California, where was I at this point in time? I have to think, okay, where was I literally, you know?
Just a quick question.
Yes.
So from all of your descriptions, Los Angeles, as large as it is, seemed congested to you, so you were glad to get away. You went to Hawaii. Being so small, glad to get away. You went to Sicily, small again, glad to get away. Would you have been happy to have just stayed in Belgium? Because it seems like it doesn't have all of those limitations of all of those other places.
Yes.
So I'd love to hear a little bit more about you. You didn't mention going to Germany, but of course it's pretty darn close there too. So where did you go? What were your experiences with, how diverse is it when you go to France versus England versus Germany, Switzerland maybe?
Okay, so this was really fun. So when we first moved there, they were still, each country still had its own money.
Currency.
Yes, thank you, Dave. And that was kind of fun because every time you would go into another country, obviously you'd have to go get the currency of that country. And that was always kind of fun. But we also lived there when they changed to the euro. We were there during that whole process as well. But I think I counted... I think I've been to like 13 countries in Europe or something like that.
Did you get to Scandinavia?
Not while I lived there, but a couple of years ago. I mean, you know, I still travel. I love to travel. It's in my blood. It's in Holly's blood. You know, my listeners always hear me talk about my daughters, Holly and Heather, and my mom and everything. And Holly and I, we still travel. And a couple of years ago, maybe not 2 years, 3 years ago, we went to Stockholm. Hmm. And that was fun. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
So this may be different, but your husband died of melanoma.
Correct.
And I've been facing quite a few people with that sort of medical problem.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it has... My attorney, Bob Dodd, who used to be mayor of Champaign, lost to that and other things too. But is there anything you can say about the changes of medical procedures that make this more amenable?
Sorry, didn't mean to be rude there.
We just shut the door because we input. This is real life, folks. Community radio.
Yes. I must say, unfortunately, as far as melanoma goes, no, there is no cure. And it's very aggressive. You know, once it hits you and starts spreading, it's very aggressive. And he tried some experimental things that worked for a very short time, and then it just kind of blew up. But unfortunately, there really isn't a whole heck of a lot you can do for melanoma.
The genome people are beginning to find there are so many different cancers, right? Mm-hmm. And this is one, I think.
Yes.
And
yeah, I mean, he had that genome test, and that was part of the thing of him getting on this experimental drug that they had. And don't even get me started on our medical system here. Again, you know, I've lived in countries where they have socialized medicine, and don't, if you've not experienced it, you know, don't blast it. Unlike our medical system here, where, you know, here, if you want to live, you'll pay $10,000 for this medicine, you know, just, you know, that's ridiculous.
Yes, so it's just more social.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You go to a hospital, you know, you're taking care, and the first question is not, what is your insurance carrier? It's, you know, what can we do for you? Why are you here? And they don't release you until they find out what's going on, and they take care of you. And I mean, I'm not saying that it's, you know, all, you know, butterflies and roses, you know, everywhere around the world. Of course, you know, I mean, I just experienced it where I experienced it. But the socialized medicine that I experienced was amazing. You know, and again, my husband was first diagnosed with a melanoma in Belgium, and they were just, yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Part of this has to do with the resources that you have. The U.S. has soils and rain and people, and the rainfall falls in the appropriate time for growth. So you have a mid-latitude wealth that other countries often do not have.
Mm-hmm.
Australia, for instance, is largely desert and very low rainfall. And so the soils, even if they did have rainfall, are not... They've been under the sea and leached and not productive. So we're very lucky to have in Illinois very, very rich glaciated soils that have come from the Canadian areas where there's been rich basic rocks. And so we not only have igneous rocks or volcanic rocks, but we have sedimentary rocks. They're all mixed in with each other. And so we have a rich soil, and sometimes it's filled in river valleys that were V-shaped,
mm-hmm.
and you might have 200 feet of that. So even though we waste it by putting in herbicide and doing things that are productive for the moment, we can still go deep, and we're rich. So that leads, I think, to a little bit of independence.
Mm-hmm.
You can do your own thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not be dependent on the crowd. So, yes, you have to think about that when you're dealing with politics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do we work with that?
Yeah. And I just, you know, and well, like I always do on all of my shows, I just jump all over the place. Kind of very quickly back to the question that Dave asked, the other Dave, about the diversity of the different countries and whatnot. And it was really, you know, one thing, like we bought a little, they call them over there, a little caravan. We bought like a little camper when we were there. And like the little teardrop, you know, not these, again, not these monstrosities that they
you
have
tuck it
here,
behind
you
your
know.
Car.
It's like, why even leave your house, people, you know? You're taking it with you. But we bought this little caravan while we were over there. And, you know, we're a camping family and we would camp all over the place. And that was fun going into like a camp ground in the Czech Republic, and I remember, you know, just everybody coming over, and and of course their camping is more like, well, now they call it like glamping or something like that. It's like glamour camping. Mm-hmm. And well, they had that over there way before we had it over here. You go over there and they have really nice facilities in the campground, you know, like little kitchenettes so you can actually cook, and nice facilities. And gosh, we went into this one, I remember this one bathroom in a campground in Hungary. It was so clean. I swear I probably could have eaten. I mean, I wouldn't have, but it was so clean. It looks like you could have eaten off the floor. Unlike most of the campground bathrooms that you go to in the United States, you know. Experiencing that culture as well, you know, rather than, say, you know, going to Paris and staying in a nice hotel, which is always nice, and we did that a few times as well. But it was more fun, you know, going to campgrounds and kind of just staying with the down-to-earth people, so to speak. And I'd say, yeah, there really was. You could tell a difference in each country that you went to. The Dutch, they're very open and they love to travel. And the Germans love to travel and camp. And they're very open and very friendly. And the French, not quite. And I'm not dissing the French. If you're French, I'm not dissing the French. And
We used to have volunteers come from Europe, and they were very different, whether they came from Spain or
Or the Eastern Europeans, you know. It's just like, I'm not going to say it.
The views and opinions expressed. So, but I understood that the French do like to travel within France. Are you saying that they were less likely to go to Germany or Switzerland?
I mean, and less likely to, quote unquote, rough it, you know, like in a campground, right, okay. So to speak, mm-hmm. You know. Yes. Mm-hmm. But as far as like the French snobbery, though, you know, like a lot of people say, you know, with the French, maybe once I did experience that, but for the most part, no. And again, really, for the most part, most Europeans, you know, just like most people around the world, are very kind and generous and open if you let them be, and if you're that same way,
yes,
you know.
That's partially why I was interested to have you on, was I think a lot of what we do has to do with knowing each other.
Yes.
And sharing.
It's so important.
To be private and stiff upper lip is not always helpful. My mother was from London.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Cockney.
Oh.
And there's a reserve there that you encounter. In Australia, there's a convict. The convicts that couldn't come to the U.S. went to Australia.
Yeah.
And so you have an inner suburb situation, which goes back to people like the Beatles. And it's a different culture.
Yeah.
And you share in a different way. And the Cockneys share in a different way. They have a poetry to them. And we tend to lose those things as we make big cities that are international. But I think we still need to keep those little pieces together.
Definitely.
It's very, very different. Like, I stepped out of Weft not long ago, and a woman from Finland was here because her daughter was getting a degree here. It makes the world a very much smaller place. That means
it's a very small world. It really is.
We have to be able to sometimes hug each other. Sometimes we can't hug each other because that's not part of the
culture.
The culture.
Mm-hmm.
So and the language is helpful.
Very much so.
Do you have to speak French?
Well, again, whenever we moved anywhere, the military always highly suggests that you take the language of the host country. Mm-hmm. So when we moved to Italy, for instance, I took a year of Italian, and, you know, I could get around. I could go to the market. I could go to places and ask, you know, where was it? Of course, I've lost it since then. And then the same when we moved to Belgium, I took a year of French, and, again, I could get around in the French community. But, again, it's so embarrassing because, you know, and again, I don't want to say the majority of Americans. Well, many or most Americans only speak one language. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You go over there, like especially in Belgium, they're going to speak 3-4 languages right off the bat. French, Flemish, and German, because that's the 3 languages of the country. Then they're going to speak, most of them are going to speak English as well, and they still teach Latin in school. So, I mean,
partially because they're rather Catholic in some parts.
Yeah. But again, so you're going someplace and you're trying to just, you know, babble whatever you want to babble in English, and these people are hopping back and forth between 3, 4, 5 languages like it's nothing, you know, and you're just like going, damn.
Well, tell me, you haven't been to the were you in the African continent?
I have not been there, but I was on the Rock of Gibraltar, and I could see it on the other side of, and this was actually, we had planned to go to Morocco while we were there, but 9/11 happened while we were there, and they cut off all travel for military at that time, and especially to places like, you know, Morocco and mm-hmm. whatnot. Yeah, the Middle East. So we were not able to, but we did see it from like, yeah, there it is. It's over there on the other side of the, what is that, the Strait of Gibraltar or whatever that is. Yeah.
So did any of your travels have you think about colonialism? Because you were near France, and France, you were talking about Algeria, and people that were treated differently in some of these states, but they also migrated to France or to...
Oh, and even Belgium. In fact, while we were there, there was a big concern about the influx of Middle Easterners coming into that area.
And it means the English Empire, the sun never set on the English Empire, and so there was a leadership, and we haven't really replaced that with democracy, because a lot of those countries, although they took in the French language or the English language, they were still very different, and they've retained their leadership of sometimes one person, one king, one, and sometimes that seems to be more effective than an attempt to create a democracy that is not effective.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Enough said.
Yes. So how did you deal with the sunlight in these places? If I grew up in Australia, I grew up with a pair of shorts and a singlet.
Well, Southern California, SoCal gal, yeah, same here.
So so I got very, very dark, dark enough that I could almost be referred to as an Aboriginal, because I have a kind of flat nose. So that has to do with medical things too, because we get more ultraviolet light, and we get skin cancers and things
like
that.
Yes, unfortunately, more so now.
So, and that also has the world gets to have holes in the atmosphere.
Ozone and all of that good stuff. Not good stuff.
Yes, it we wear hats.
And in fact, at the end of almost every show, I always say, you know, go out and spread the love and wear your sunscreen.
Yes.
And that's why I say that.
And sometimes that's a problem, because if you're indoors with indoor lighting and you are there day and night, you don't get enough vitamin D. Mm-hmm. You don't get sunlight to activate the chemicals in your body. So then you need to take pills for that. So, yes, we have to think about all these things and how we get together and how do we get together in our own town. And I'm glad to talk about some of the people who pass on from time to time.
Mm-hmm, of course.
We learn about them and their
it's history.
To do things that like friendly jurisdiction. Just next door, I had someone who came from California who had been in a college situation where he was there were very few black people, but he had a BMW vehicle, and he was pulled over many, many times to the point that he eventually said, this is it, I'm not...
We know what's going on here, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just trying to keep it together. But
yes.
This Friday night, David took me to some music around the corner.
Oh!
I very much enjoyed that. It was amazing how many people that I met there and
see
shared
there?
With. And so these little things happen. And I went around the corner that's unfortunately that two groups were running music at the same time. It was just interesting to meet with people and discuss. And so I really want to encourage that. I want to encourage the farmers market, which in Champaign has had problems over the years because it is so many different locations. So there's a real attempt to get some action there. And again, it's friendly. To talk to people.
As is the Urbana market.
Yes.
Because I live in Urbana. I got to push Urbana. I love Urbana. And in fact, very quickly, Dave, I hope you don't mind me saying that, you know, obviously, 4 minutes, I'll make it quick. You know, we've been talking about many of the different places that I've lived and grown up and experienced and this and that. And it's all been, you know, fine and wonderful and dandy. However, and I must say, and I actually told my daughter Holly this a couple of months ago or so, we were driving around Urbana. Again, and out of all of the places that I've ever lived, this is the first time, and again, I live in Urbana, I love Urbana, this is the first time I actually feel a true sense of community.
Yes, it's sometimes more likely to happen in Urbana than in Champaign.
Well, and again, I'm not dissing Champaign. I'm just saying from all of my personal experiences from everywhere I've lived, this is the first time I've actually truly felt a sense of community, and it's wonderful. I love it.
And I think it can happen in Champaign too.
It's
just axiomatic.
And it does.
There was a railroad line, and then so the commercial world came to Champaign rather than to Urbana, and so it's a different cat.
Mm-hmm.
The early Yankee people who came here to set up the university came to Champaign actually, and then moved over to East Champaign and Urbana. So, well, we got a little bit of
2 time. 2 minutes.
I want to encourage people to go to the prairie because it is interesting. You won't know the species, but you will see the lumps and bumps and vegetation growing, and the biomass is tremendous, and the biodiversity, if you're lucky, is tremendous.
I'm officially a beekeeper.
Ooh, cool. She bought a beehive.
I'll have to take you out to Prairie Fruit. They're out at the Prairie Fruit Farm, the Delight Flower Farm. Thank you very much.
But let me tell you that the bees that are native, bumblebees and the little bees and flies that do things to pollinate, are inconvenient for us in that they don't have wax cones that you can harvest from.
Mine are Italian.
Yes, you have Italian bees. And if you're a self-respecting remnant prairie, won't invite you to be putting your bees on the remnant prairie, because we want to encourage the native bees, and especially the bumblebees, that they're having a hard time.
Mm-hmm, but I'll take you out to the farm with me sometime.
Yes. Well, we know the farm. It's very, very near to the Olympian Drive. That is a sort of ring road around Champaign.
They just put that road into nowhere.
Well, yes. There's some debate about that. There's the other end of it on the Champaign is sort of nowhere, too. But the attempt was to do that. So, okay, I think we're near to the end. I want to encourage you to go down First Street to Church Street and then go along the backside of the Pisota Moraine, which drains into the Ombro River, and then you go up the hill a little bit, which is on the face of the Yankee Ridge Moraine, and there, before you get to Vine Street comes to a dead end at the end of this Barnhart Prairie. There's a nice mown path through the prairie, and you can go there on your bicycle and park in a small parking lot with your car.
And go walk the prairie. It's noon.
This is David.